I'm coming your way live from Singapore. And boy, did I just come from a fascinating meeting.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Do any of you think that there's something to this whole human climate change issue that has been pushed for so many years and that former Vice President Gore made into such a major issue? If you haven't heard, according to the reports I'm looking at, a total of 2,500 people, 2,500 marched in 150 countries. Michael Brown coming your way from Singapore, where they have an interesting haze issue on the island of Singapore, which is shaped like a diamond and which you could drive across without traffic in about 45 minutes and is absolutely gorgeous in many places. And it's an amazing island. It's a city, it's a state, it's a country, it's just Singapore, and carefully regulated by the government because of the limited amount of space. I'll tell you about cars and other things here. Fascinating, but don't complain about the price of things in the States. All right, just let me say that. When you buy a little car, nothing fancy, and it costs you over 100,000 Singapore dollars. So say it costs you 80,000, 90,000 American dollars. Yeah, for some cheap little car, you'll know not to complain. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Whole bunch of things I want to talk to you about and share some of my experience here in Singapore. I've been to Asia many times, but this is only my second time in Singapore, and it's the middle of the night. I got back from a very interesting meeting, which I'll tell you about in a little while. Got back from that, slept for a couple of hours, got up to get ready for radio, and I'm here ready and raring to go. But tell you what, if you weren't planning on calling, if you've never called the show, if you've listened for over 6 years and never called once, which would be the vast majority of you listening, shows I've listened to on the radio over the years, I've never called normally. But if you've never called, if you weren't planning on calling, give me a call and you can ask me about anything in the world you want to ask me about, because I'm going to take questions on a wide range of subjects, and you'll keep me company here in Singapore with my portable radio equipment in the middle of the night. Again, Singapore is 12 hours ahead from Eastern Standard. 866-34-TRUTH. So do you want to know the haze problem that they have here in Singapore? In Malaysia, which is a neighboring country from which Singapore buys its water, because it used to be a little fishing island, and it was under the British and got its independence 50 years ago. Next year will mark the 50th anniversary, and that is 2015 from 1965. But what kind of there's fields? I forget what is planted in Malaysia, but when it's time to clear the fields, what they do is they burn them, and by burning them, they clear them, but all the smoke then comes over to Singapore, and there's haze in the environment. A little bit different. But, okay, to get a car, are you ready? You have to bid for a certificate of entitlement, which will cost you $50,000, $60,000, $70,000. They only have a certain number of cars on the road because there's only a certain amount of room here. Then when you add in the price of the car, we pulled up to some exotic race car, and they said, oh, that's over $1 million. And they said, what are you going to do with it? There's nowhere to drive fast. Anyway, we'll be right back.
want, for fire we please.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, what's a topic that everyone here, not everyone, but leader after leader after leader wants me to talk about and wants to talk to me about here in Singapore? Michael Brown, 2:07 in the morning here in Singapore, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. And the phone lines are open for you to ask me about anything, anything you want to raise, discuss today. We're opening the phones wide this Monday, and a bunch of things I want to talk to you about as well. But yes, hyper-grace comes up a lot. Pastor Joseph Prince has the largest church, mega church, on the island of Singapore. It's had exceptional growth in the last 10 years. And of course, there are many, many helped and blessed by his message and teaching of the word and insights on grace. And then there were areas where we would strongly differ, as I address in my Hyper-Grace book. I have folks seeking to get us together to see if we could spend time. I'm not even sure if he's here right now. But in any case, that's one thing. Sure, that comes up quite naturally. I'm in Singapore. But the other thing that comes up constantly, I mean, everyone's bringing it up to me. Pastors are bringing it up to me. Individuals are bringing it up to me. Leaders are bringing it up to me. Business people are bringing it up to me. LGBT issues, as they describe it. Gay and lesbian issues. They are bringing it up constantly and wanting insights from America. And When I get back, God willing, next week, I want to record a special video for our friends at the HRC, the so-called Human Rights Campaign, which has really become a hate-mongering group. One friend has now renamed them the Human Smear Campaign, and we pray for folks in that to really come to know the Lord and to really do the right thing as opposed to being hate-mongering and fear-mongering. But when I shared earlier today, so a few hours back, I was asked to speak at a full gospel businessman's dinner. It was on short notice, and I thought, full gospel businessman? Are they still around? I mean, I remember in the States when it was something powerfully used by the Lord, started by Dimo Shikarian. And I knew folks that were involved with it way back when, and they would bring their non-believing friends to the dinner, and they'd hear some dynamic testimony, and they'd get saved or healed or filled with the Spirit. And I thought, well, I got a rare free night. Do I want to go to speak somewhere? And then I found out from a respected national leader in the secular realm, more on the government side of things and the ministry side of things, that these were key business people and leaders in the nation who really had a view to cultural transformation. They really had a view to making an impact in the marketplace as businessmen and business women, and they had a real vision to touch the younger generation. So I said, you bet, I'll do it. And it was an anniversary, maybe their 40th anniversary, something like that. I'm talking about dynamic leaders, but these guys and gals, they were like little children too, full of enthusiasm. And they'd get up, okay, we're going to sing this song. And they pull me up on the stage with them. And, you know, like in a children's song, you're doing all the motions. And they raise the hands here, and you turn this way. We're doing all this stuff. And these are people who were top business people, top investment bankers, an academic with a PhD in history here, and people of influence. And so first there is the childlikeness of it and the enthusiasm of it, but this real vision that they're supposed to make a difference in all spheres of society through the gospel, that it's not just something that you do in church, in a building or in a meeting, but something that is lived out, and that if God has given you influence, that you use it for the glory of God. And again, they wanted to raise these issues as well. These were important issues. 866-34-TRUTH. Before I go to the phones, I just want to play something for you. This is a discussion about polyamory. It was took place at the University of Technology in Sydney, Australia, September 2nd of 2012. The story follows several people living in Sydney who are polyamorous and explores the life, relationships, and issues facing ethical non-monogamy in Australia. These are all folks in their 20s, Kitty Hawkins, Chris Hawkins, and Natalie Kula. Joey, let's start with clip number 10. Just as we talk about where things go in society, opening doors, consequences, just want you to hear some of these comments. Clip number 10.
Jealousy is based on your own insecurities. Am I not as good as this other person?
With monogamy, you're sort of looking, this one person is my other half. This is the one person who I come home to, who I cook with, who I sleep with, who we do things with. If they start spending time with someone else, they're not spending with you. Are they going to replace you?
Half of yourself.
And if they're gone, if they pick someone else, then there's no room for you.
Yeah, and this was a journalism documentary put together by a student at the university. And here are some of the clips. I mean, these ideas of jealousy and just commitment to one person instead of multiple loving relationships, you know, just outmoded, this monogamy thing. Number 11.
You know, I want the white picket fence. I have, you know, Chris and Nat, and I have other lovers that
are welcome to come over.
But, you know, that I dream of having a big,
supportive poly household.
I want to have that communal family, and kids may well be in that future. And I think that's I believe that it takes a village to raise a child.
That's what I was thinking.
And I love the idea of having a communal family, not like every Tom, Dick and Harry that wants to come in the door, but just a network of, you know, a few, you know, four or five people that I want to spend my life with. You know, there may be just two primary partners that I have, but if I have children, they're not only going to have two parents, they're going to have a whole network.
Not just two parents, a mom and a dad? Really? All right, skip over to 13. Why do I raise this? I raise this because of the perspective of once you redefine marriage. Again, these are live issues now around the world, and I'm being asked to address them. And one thing I'm going to go out of my way to do is address them with compassion, with respect for all human beings, while explaining why I differ with the goals of gay activism. Clip number 13.
I worked for a gay rights lobby group for years, and we campaigned for equal marriage. I wholeheartedly believe that if you love someone, you should have the right to be legally equal. I don't, as far as I'm concerned, if it's two consent, two or more consenting adults, it's no one else's business.
And I've got some more clips to play for you, but do you understand this? If you're going to redefine marriage, if gay activists are going to redefine marriage, and I put the question out again to every gay activist listening or monitoring this show afterwards, to anyone listening who supports redefining marriage, that a man should be able to marry a man or a woman marry a woman, to anyone who supports that, please tell me, once you redefine it and say it's no longer the union exclusively of one man and one woman, why limit it to two people? Why must it be two people? Why should it be two people? Why not marry yourself? Why not three or four? Hey, it takes a village to raise a child. So, please, someone tell me. I put this question out for years when I debated it at the University of Central Florida campus a few years back with Professor Eric Small. When I asked him why only two, he said, well, I've made an agreement not to discuss that. Well, you're coming in to do a debate on a subject that you proposed, same-sex marriage, should it be legal? Now I raise the question. I said, I'm not talking about polygamy or slippery slope. I'm just asking a question. If it's not one man and one woman, if it's not a man and a woman, why is it two people? And again, these are issues. Here I am in Singapore. so it's halfway around the world, right? It's from Dulles Airport in D.C. Flew one flight to get into Dulles, and then from Dulles it was about a 14-hour flight to Japan, then from Japan here another 7 hours. It's just an isolated island, an independent nation. And these issues are being raised to me to talk about. So I'm just going to put the question out once more. Please tell me why, too. Oh, yeah, yeah. The latest news. Brazilian baby has now been registered with three parents. Oh, and it's happened in the States as well, that a baby's been registered to three parents. All right, straight to your calls when we get back.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
For the first time in Brazil, a judge in Southern Rio Grande do Sul Rio Grande do Sul state has permitted a baby to be registered with two mothers and a father. The judge said the baby's biological parents and the mother's female partner requested the baby's birth certificate be changed. The woman, quote, married 2 months ago and the father was a male friend. Expect more and more of this. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Jay in Manhattan. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hi, Michael.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm okay. There's three things that really perplex me. Number one, I know you did a film with Pure Passion, a ministry I've been mentioning for the past year. Such was some of you.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I participated in the David Kyle Foster documentary.
Okay, now, that's a ministry I've mentioned several times in your show. It's very similar to my ministry. And the funny thing is that ministry is disliked by Christians because they deal with prostitutes and strippers and drug addicts. Number two, the show that you had Wednesday about corporal punishment.
Mm-hmm.
What I call like the Joan Crawford Mommy Dearest fan club, I mean, they were sort of frightening. Because I was punished a lot when I was a kid, and I was hit with sticks and all of that other stuff. So it was kind of frightening.
Yeah, now, would you say that that your parents punished you the way these folks were talking about, which is not in anger and in a measured way and with an expression of love?
They did it with both. Like, if I drop something, and because I have a neurological disorder, I drop a lot of things, they would punish me for that because they said I did it on purpose. But they would hit me with sticks. They would hit me with shoes upon my head. They would hit me with belt buckles.
Sorry to hear that on every level, but certainly that's not what the folks were advocating that we're talking about. You know, spanking children, anyway.
I just want to get to the last part.
No, please, go ahead.
Okay. In the news, there's three people in the news. Two of them died, and I met these three people, and believe it or not, they treated me with great respect, and they could have torn me up verbally, because they had that sort of sense of humor. Not one joke, not one put down. One was Robin Williams. I met him on the set of Fisher King. I spoke to him, very shy, very civil towards me. The other one who died was Joan Rivers. I met her several times. She actually complimented me on the way I look, which is very odd. And the other one was somebody who eulogized Joan Rivers. That was Howard Stern. And Howard Stern actually, when I said how much I liked him, he stopped with his wife Beth, turned around to me and said, "Oh, thank you. I really needed that. Thank you." And not one joke, not one put down. But like recently, I had my usual experience of Christians.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm sorry you keep having these experiences, and perhaps the Lord will use these in your life to help you to love unconditionally and to help you overcome bad attitudes with good attitudes. You remind us when you say, let's say you speak of Howard Stern, who's among the living now and for whose salvation we pray, that someone could be into all kinds of sexual perversion and things that are certainly despicable on a scriptural level, and could be a nice, friendly person in other ways. Of course, that's part of humanity. The thing that just strikes me as odd, though, Jay, and it's always good chatting with you, and I pray you continue to grow in love and grace regardless of how anyone treats you. When you take a ministry like Pure Passion, David Kyle Foster's ministry, mentioned that Christians don't like it because it reaches out to prostitutes and others. Well, I'm not familiar with that. I'm really not familiar with that. In other words, I know leaders, pastors, individuals that love his ministry and respect it because of the good they're doing. I know gay activists will attack and mock. Right Wing Watch just attacked and mocked an ad for Such Were Some of You. But we got to get you hanging out with the right people, Jay, that love Jesus and love people, including people who are a little different. All right, thank you, sir, for the call. So very quickly, I'm here in Singapore. I was doing different meetings, spoke to Assemblies of God National Conference all day Thursday and then Friday morning. Then I preached Saturday late afternoon and Sunday morning at one of the mega churches here in Singapore, Trinity. And when I, after the meeting, a young woman came up to me. She said, "I'm Rachel." I knew exactly who she was, Rachel from Singapore. Somehow I had seen a comment that she had posted or somewhere on YouTube, whatever it was, that she was caught up in lesbianism. She was in a relationship with another woman. She was now struggling with various issues, but was definitely unable to break free. Found David Kyle Foster's YouTubes on video, online, and then found an interview that David did with me a few years ago, and for the first time saw reasonable answers and heard them expressed with love. And that was a key to her coming out of lesbianism, and she was just so happy to meet me face-to-face and came up the next day all smiles again, and I was all smiles to see her, and she had a copy of Can You Be Gay and Christian? 866-34-TRUTH. Michael in Weymouth, Massachusetts, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing well, thanks.
Can you hear me?
I can.
Okay, good, because I'm outside, that's all. It's windy here. I guess I was listening to your show on the way here, and I'm just, you know, what I feel is, you know, you've heard the adage, you know, when we don't stand for something, we don't fall for anything. And that seems to be what's happening in our culture. We've lost the moral compass, and, you know, and I was listening to what you were saying, multiple partners and marriage like that, and my question, where does it end? Are people going to be marrying their dogs,
are they going to be... Yeah, well, you know, on the one hand, Michael, that's been the argument for years, that, as Bill O'Reilly once said, someone may marry their box turtle, and that gave way to a whole new online gay watchdog organization called Box Turtle Bulletin, or website, I should say. But what's interesting is that we keep having marriage redefined more and more. I'm not going to compare someone's love for a dog to love for a fellow human being, homosexual relationship or other. But in point of fact, I'm working on a book now, and I document just lots from a woman marrying herself to on and on and on and on and on and on. Where is the limit? Why would there be a limit once marriage is redefined? The good news is I believe that as we continue to stand for what's right and get our marriages and families in better shape, that will outlast the social madness. Hey, thank you for the call. Friends, we have a very special offer this Wednesday. I am going to be interviewing for 2 full hours Jonathan Cahn, the best-selling New York Times best-selling author of his new book, The Mystery of the Shemitah. And we will package together his brand new book and the interview. In fact, it's the very day that ties in with the date of Shemitah. $25 postage paid for the book and my exclusive interview. 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Yes, yes, we have been put on notice. We have been put on notice by the Human Rights Campaign, which Peter LaBarbera of Americans for Truth has renamed, not the Human Rights Campaign, but the Human Smear Campaign. Peter is on the main list of extremists. I am on the dishonorable mention list, along with leading Christian attorney Matt Staver, some of the most ridiculous artwork I've ever seen. It's one of these things that would really be funny and is really pathetic if not for the fact that some people take this seriously, and that the Human Rights Campaign works closely with the President of the United States and Attorney General Holder and others, and has a budget of $45 million, and yet these extremists, people like me, going to Singapore and saying, treat everyone with love and respect and decency and honor, but look at what's happened in America, and here's why you shouldn't redefine marriage. An extremist! Well, let me welcome to the broadcast fellow extremist, hate monger, and doer of terrible things around the world, Peter LaBarbera himself, for Americans for Truth. Welcome to the broadcast, Peter.
Hey, Michael, thanks a lot. And I must say, you're a better looking guy than that photo in that drawing in the HRC booklet.
Oh yeah, you know the thing that's funny. I posted it on Facebook a couple of times. You know, Matt Staver looks like he got punched in the eye. He's got a black eye, and the one of me, you know, if they got $45 million, they can hire someone who can actually draw, which means the ridiculous drawings, the ominous drawings, are intentional. Peter, just your opinion, but why can't people just deal with facts and information rather than having to cast everyone as homophobic, hate-mongering bigots?
Well, Michael, I think this is sort of the Saul Alinsky tactic. You know, you need to demonize your foes. It's the way the left advances. You ridicule and you mock. I mean, anybody who's heard you knows you give very serious talks, serious presentations. You debate across the world. My group is devoted to research-based information about the homosexual activist movement, but they have to demonize us in order to win. That's the way they operate.
Yeah, and you've watched this for many years, but let me just ask you something honestly. With all the money that you make doing this, because it's such a lucrative business, have you moved up to your personal jet yet?
Yeah, you know, I've got it on order. I'm just picking out the colors. But yeah, yeah. It's absolutely absurd. I didn't know the budget of HRC was at $45 million, but it just keeps going up and up. But, you know, what's really insane about this, Michael, is, you know, with the web, these lies traffic more easily. And I know you've seen the same thing as I have. A lot of the so-called gay research, unquote, is based on out-of-context or badly reported facts from other pro-homosexual websites, and these lies just keep spreading and spreading. And the biggest victim is the number one guy in the report, which is Scott Lively. I mean, they're going around saying that Scott Lively wants to kill Ugandan homosexuals. And if a guy who's off-kilter already hears something like that, you know, he might want to just go out and assassinate Scott Lively since he's such a bad guy, allegedly.
Yeah, and, you know, the thing that's interesting, a Ugandan pastor that was on my radio show was very insulted by the fact that the American view was that these pastors in Uganda couldn't think for themselves and they didn't come up with their own legislation. And then when they came up with their legislation, of course, Scott Lively said he rejected the death penalty and even with the newer legislation thought penalties were too harsh. I'll tell you what, we come back and just want to talk about what facts we should be thinking about.
Change the world.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to The Line of Fire, 866-348-7884. Before I get back to the phones, as I'm coming away live from Singapore, I'm speaking with my friend and colleague, Peter LaBarbera of Americans for Truth. Peter, for those that don't know why I was joking with you about finances, you've done this for years, a thankless task. I remember when I asked you why you take the stands you do, you said, well, you'll quit when activists quit. In other words, you are responding to issues that are coming up in society. But you've not only done this in a thankless way, but it's also been a sacrificial way. Rather than getting money for personal jet, you're believing God for money to put gas in the car to get right to where you're going. But deep down, what motivates you to do what you're doing? It's obviously not fame and fortune. What motivates you?
I guess the bottom line is probably like you, Michael. I mean, there's no room for hate because lives are in the balance here. And the one most wonderful part of my job is educating people about ex-gays, people who've left the homosexual and lesbian and even transgender lifestyles. And it's most of them, as you know, Michael, are through Jesus Christ, the power of Jesus. And I'm going to be going to an ex-gay event early October, put on by PFOX, which is a great pro-family group. And, you know, I want people to know that this is not who they are. I believe homosexuality really is about what you're doing, not who you are. And that's sort of the lie from the pit of hell, is that a person is defined by a sin. And, you know, we don't hate people because we ourselves, you know, we needed Jesus' sacrifice. I did. I still struggle with sins. I don't struggle with this particular sin. But we don't have adultery pride parades. We don't have the president issue porn user proclamation months. It's only this particular sin, which has a very strong lobby behind it, that is treated that way. And, you know, we want people to find their way out of this behavior, and it does not define them.
When you speak of this behavior, obviously there are men and women who identify as homosexual and say, this is who I am. And some of them are very much in love with a partner that they've been with primarily or exclusively for a period of time. And yet it's clear that God didn't design men to be with men, women to be with women. Are there consequences that you've documented to actual homosexual behavior, to men being with men in particular? Are there things you've documented in recent years?
Yeah, absolutely. The most stunning fact that I've come up with on the health issues, Michael, is in 2011, the CDC, now that's a federal health agency, reported that between 94 and 95% of all male HIV cases ages 13 to 24, 94 to 95% of those were related to, quote, male-to-male sexual contact. So in other words, homosexual behavior was a factor in virtually every case of HIV among young men, and that's stunning. And yet the CDC still basically promotes the gay lifestyle, will not criticize it like it does, say, smoking.
Right, and that would be the question. Isn't it loving to speak against something that could be unhealthy or destructive? Let's just listen to part of the HRC video accusing you of being a hate-mongering extremist. Clip number 8, Joey.
Homosexuality is nothing to be proud of. And as the success of the homosexual lobby and gay power grew, so did its lies. The transgender revolution and so-called gender identity as another bogus civil rights category. And the still popular yet never proven born gay myth. Under the new and escalating gay tyranny, cries for tolerance have been replaced by plans for dominance.
I'm sorry to laugh.
I like the music. Again,
yeah, thanks. That's you know, the HRC presents things like that and give a little rope to my creative producer Matt, and that's what you're gonna get. But listen, I feel bad that people do believe it. And folks in HRC, they're fellow human beings for whom Jesus died, that I don't want to reach out to. But the thing is so ridiculously laughable. This is an example of you being an extremist. You know, when I went to Peru earlier this year at the invitation of a congressman there, and I addressed a special gathering of congressmen and university chancellors. I opened up my speech by saying I'm not here to incite hatred against anyone. I'm not here to demonize anyone. I said that gays and lesbians may be some of the finest people you know, fellow workers, family members, etc. But I want to let you know what happens when you normalize homosexuality and redefine marriage. I'm going to just tell you the consequences. So that's spreading hate and free. Yeah, and the Matt and I have some fun putting out a response, but that music, the ominous music, that's actually the Human Rights Campaign. Well,
Michael, you know, we wouldn't have you being our speaker at our banquet at Americans for Truth next month if you weren't a model of speaking the truth in love, and I seek to follow your model in that sense. You know, there's really no room for hate. Every single group on this in this report, I'm sure, has denounced, you know, people like Fred Phelps, you know, with the God hates fags message. We've denounced real hate, but they're trying to say that mere opposition to homosexuality, if you dare speak out and defend God-given morals, that constitutes hatred. And they're really pushing this line strongly.
Yeah, which again suggests the weakness of the argument when you can't simply deal with facts. I'm not demonizing someone if I say that God did not make a man to be with a man. That's not demonizing anyone. It's just talking about biological, divine design, natural law. You are demonizing someone when you accuse them of something that is absolutely false. What happened, Pete, when you were in Canada? You ran into some hatred there as well.
Oh, absolutely. In Canada, it's scary, Michael. There is a hate propaganda law which bans so-called hatred on the basis of a number of categories, including sexual orientation. And I was almost kept from entering Canada after my flight landed. I had been invited to speak at a pro-life gathering. I was initially kept out on the basis of this hate speech law. Then some conservative politicians brought their weight to bear, and I was allowed in. But after that, I was arrested because I was standing with another pro-family advocate, merely standing in defense of truth on homosexuality and abortion at a college campus, and we were arrested. And so, you know, I've started to see that the more anti-hate legislation and activism of the left that there is in any given society, I think the more hatred is put forth on defenders of morality, on defenders of God's sense of sex and marriage. You know, we become the victims of this hate because they're ginning up all this activity.
Yeah, it is what's happening. There is a consistent turning of the tide that says if you hold to biblical values, Christian values, the only thing that we've known of marriage in our history and in most of the history of the human race, namely man and woman coming together, that you are somehow hate-filled. Peter, you've put out the word social media and in other ways looking for someone to debate me the night before I speak at the banquet. Any success on finding anyone willing to debate, discuss what the Bible says about homosexual practice or any related subject with me?
Well, not yet, but I haven't tried real hard. I'm really doing that now, and I'm hoping we get the highest level person to debate you because I'm confident that you're going to prevail and show people the folly of this sort of gay Christianity. And what really scares me in this debate, Michael, is I think many evangelicals are buying into this idea of homosexuality as, quote, who you are. And I just think that's so tragic, especially when you see people like, you know, CNN's host Don Lemon, you know, the famous black host on CNN. He was molested as a child, and then later he acknowledged that on the air, and then later he said he came out as, quote, unquote, gay. And what's so fascinating is even when there's a molestation or a predatory, you know, something predatory happening in a person's background or childhood, they still say basically they are gay. That's essentially who they are. And they don't factor that in to this aberrant identity. And that's fascinating because it's like the facts are irrelevant.
Yeah. And you know what's interesting? I've spoken to gays and lesbians and they assure me they had great upbringing and everything was great with mom and dad. And there was no molestation. So I believe their story if they're telling me that. But counselors I know who've counseled hundreds and hundreds of people, pastors who over a period of years have counseled many, many, many people. And many who've come out of homosexuality have told me the same thing, that just about everyone they've counseled or they knew was molested at some point growing up. there was a gal who had come out of lesbianism who heard me speak in Kansas City and was just so joyful about the transformation in her life some years back. And she just said it was her own background, that she had been raped. And then she said everyone that she knew, so when she was living a lesbian lifestyle, that everyone that she knew had been sexually abused. So again, we're talking about reaching out to people with mercy and for wholeness, and we're going to be called haters for it. Hey, listen, Peter, can't wait to see you in about 1 month for the banquet. If you're anywhere near Chicago, you need to join us at the end of October. What's your website, Peter?
Yes, it's AmericansForTruth.com, all written out.
All right, Americans for Truth, F-O-R, AmericansForTruth.com. We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
We are coming your way live from Singapore, 866-34-TRUTH. To the phones, Joseph in Washington State. Thanks so much for holding. Welcome to The Line of Fire.
Hi, Dr. Brown. I'm a pretty new listener to you. The way I found out about you is I was actually listening to James White, and he had mentioned you. So I thought I'd look into you. Are you still there?
Yes, I'm listening. Sure.
Okay, sorry. It just sounded like dead air, that's why. Anyway, don't want to take up too much of your time, but ever since I learned of you, I've been trying to listen to every podcast I can. But the question I had was, I had a friend that was an Orthodox Jew, and we were trying to talk about Jesus being the Messiah. And one of the barriers I had with him was that whenever I would quote something from the Old Testament, he said that the problem with Christians using our Old Testament to witness to Jews, he says that the Bible translators changed the Old Testament in light of the New Testament. For example, Isaiah 7:14, most Christian Bibles say something along the lines of, behold, the virgin will give birth to a child. And his argument was that the only reason why our Old Testament in Isaiah says virgin is because the New Testament, Matthew, uses virgin in Matthew 1:23. And so his argument is that the Christians have changed the Old Testament, or our Old Testament, in light of Jesus, you know, basically translating it in a way that makes Jesus the Messiah. And because of that, it kind of makes me reluctant to use anything out of our Old Testament because, I just don't know how to answer that.
Sure. Thanks for raising that, Joseph. Of course, when I came to faith as a follower of Jesus in 71 and then began interacting with rabbis immediately after that, that was one of the first things they would tell me, you know, that your translation mistranslates things and they're trying to paint Jesus into the Old Testament where he doesn't belong. So a few things. First, in the vast majority of cases, the translation that a Jewish person is going to use if they're not reading directly from the Hebrew is going to be very close to a Christian translation. That's the first thing. That in the vast majority of cases, that's the reality. The second thing is every translation is a commentary in itself and that you have to make choices as to how to render something. And there are things, if you read the Stone translation, which is an Orthodox Jewish translation, it translates the text at times based on Jewish tradition, and you won't find it in other Jewish translations or Christian translations because they're reading their traditions into the text and saying, hey, that's the right way to interpret it. When it comes to Isaiah 7:14, the Hebrew word alma principally does speak of a young woman coming into puberty. That age, it is not an explicit word that would be used for virgin, but the reason that there's a tradition in Christian versions of translating it as virgin goes back to the Septuagint. So when the Greek translators, about 200 years before the time of Jesus, translated Hine Hal Maharav Yoledet Ben, translated that from Hebrew, they translated it Alma with Parthenos, which, although Parthenos does not always mean virgin, it was a clear choice that was being made, and for some reason the Septuagint translators, before the time of Jesus, translated it with virgin, and then Matthew quotes from the Septuagint in the New Testament. So it's actually an older Jewish issue, because the Septuagint is a Jewish translation that came up before the New Testament was written. So that's the problem with his argument, that it's somewhat superficial. I treat this subject at length, Isaiah 7:14, the question of the virgin birth, in volume 3 of my 5-volume series on answering Jewish objections to Jesus. And you can get a synopsis of all of the answers by going to the Real Messiah website, realmessiah.com, and just looking for answers to objections, and you'll see the short answer there. The bottom line is, though, Isaiah 7:14 is part of a larger complex of messianic prophecy, which continues in Isaiah 9 and Isaiah 11. And the prophecy in itself is somewhat obscure. In other words, Isaiah 7 is a prophecy of rebuke and judgment on the faithless king Ahaz, and then a promise in the midst of it. And it's even uncertain, is the birth portent of disaster? Is it saying God's going to raise up someone to take your place, hence a prophecy to the line of David? And that's how Matthew reads it, as an unfulfilled prophecy, or prophecy to the line of David that has not reached its complete fulfillment, and is speaking of a supernatural birth of great import, and the child born signifying God with us. But it's part of a much larger picture. But in any case, if you'll familiarize yourself with the objections that I raise in answering Jewish objections to Jesus, 5 volumes, a synopsis of all of them is there. And then with the short answer, that'll give you the responses. Also, if you go to our YouTube channel, so just go to AskDrBrown.org on our website, click on the YouTube icon. I've done a 32-lecture series on answering Jewish objections to Jesus, where I condense the 1,500 pages in my book. And if you'll just look through the list of videos, you'll see specifically where we deal with messianic prophecy and even objections to Isaiah 7:14. But again, since you're not going to know exactly when something's going to come up, when it won't, you can say, okay, let's take a look at this and pull out your Hebrew Bible. And if they raise some issue that you don't have an answer to, then by all means, check out the Inferno website, or even shoot a note to info@AskDrBrown.org. We have a team member who specifically addresses Jewish-related questions. Hey, Joseph, got to run, but thank you very much for the call. And one last thing. You have come to know the Lord and received forgiveness of sins through Jesus. So that's something unique that you've experienced in God that I encourage you to share with Jewish friends. And the great majority of Jews you'll meet here in America are not religious. Give a shout out to my friend, Dr. White, next time you're on his show. All right, friends, stay right there. Some of you have been holding for a while. I'm going to continue with calls on the other side of the break. But if you ever read Jonathan Cahn's book, The Harbinger, you know why it was a New York Times bestseller. And claims in the book are very strong and can ultimately be tested in the coming years. Well, he's written a follow-up book, The Mystery of the Shemitah. And Jonathan was going to be on with us right at the beginning of this month. The first interview in the book came out. He came down very sick with bronchitis and pneumonia. We've rescheduled, and he's going to be on with me for 2 solid hours this Wednesday, God willing. I'll be here in Singapore, and he'll be joining me from the States. So we're going to put the interview together. It's an exclusive interview that the two of us are doing. We're going to put the interview together with the book, $25 postage paid, to get his brand-new best-selling book, The Mystery of the Shemitah, together with our exclusive interview. Call now, 1-800-278-9978 to order. That's 1-800-278-9978. Once more, 1-800-278-9978, or just go to the website, AskDrBrown.org. My bottom line today, we can expect to be hated more the more that we are like Jesus and represent his cause. At the same time, we will bring life and hope to many. I'm coming your way live from Singapore, and boy, did I just come from a fascinating meeting.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome, welcome to The Line of Fire at 3 a.m. here in Singapore. You know, the good news is I'm a lot more alert and alive and focused and sharp and not tired than I was about 7:38 this evening. Remember, I'm 12 hours ahead of you here in Singapore. I was about to speak at a banquet, and I was dragging. I was tired, and I thought, oh, man. Ready to get back to the hotel. I looked at the program. I thought, oh no, it's going to go a lot later than I expect. Get back to the hotel, sleep a couple of hours, get up to radio, then go back to sleep a while after radio because I don't get picked up until noon. And anyway, thank God for holy energy and vitality and sharpness and clarity. My great joy to be with you. 866-34-TRUTH. The phone lines are open. To anything in the world you want to talk to me about, feel free to call if you differ with me. If you want to probe any issue, raise any issue. I'm about to answer some questions that were posted on Facebook. But anything at all, well, keep me company here. Over in Singapore, we've got our portable radio equipment. And Wednesday of this week, we're going to have an exclusive interview with Jonathan Kahn on his new best-selling book, The Shemitah. I want to go right to the phones. Betty, you've been holding since early last hour. Thanks so much for joining us today on The Line of Fire. Hello, Betty.
Hello?
Yes,
oh, I'm
you're
sorry.
On the air.
I didn't hear you say Betty. I'm sorry.
No, thanks
I'm sorry.
For holding.
I'm here. Okay, I have two things I'd like to say. Well, one is I don't understand suffering. I mean, I understand like that wars start because of greed, intolerance, and the lust for power. I'm reading this thing. And that special interests like geopolitical plots and lust for money. But I don't understand how people like get senile and they're in nursing homes and they're abused and children are hurt and nobody did it to, you know, they're, say the senile people. It just happens. Why does God let so much pain exist in the world? And then I have one more quick thing to say.
Why don't you say it first, and then I'll do my best to respond.
Okay, my second thing is when I took a psychology course once, the professor said that one of the reasons for homosexuality is that during the latency period of development, like a bit around like 10, 11, 12, just before adolescence when you become sexually attracted, but before that, most people bond very strongly with the same sex. You know, you see all the boys together, all the girls together, and you know, I can't stand boys. And if that doesn't happen, it happens later during adolescence when at the same time the sexual drives are occurring and they combine.
Yeah.
And I thought that fascinated me.
Yeah, well, some would look at it from this angle, that it's very important for a boy to bond with a father as the same-sex bonding and reinforcement of his malehood, and very important for a girl to bond with a mother. And then if that doesn't happen, and then something happens subsequently, let's say the child is then raped and the first really intimate same-sex experience is of that kind, or there's a wrong kind of bonding. Yeah, this is definitely the case with certain people, that some, when you trace their history, this is true. As far as suffering, Betty, you're able to watch a DVD at your home, right? If I send you a DVD?
Oh, yes.
Okay. I did a debate with Professor Bart Ehrman at Ohio State University, asking the question, does the Bible provide an adequate answer to the problem of suffering? As soon as Betsy gets a chance, Betty, she's going to get back on with you, get your address. I want to send you the DVD. Once you watch it, call me back and we'll have a discussion.
God of light, hear our cry.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
So I'm here in Singapore, was asked to speak last night at Full Gospel Businessmen's Meeting. Just a little time squeezed in, something else had canceled. We were trying to do a debate on a college campus. I was asked to do it with a gay activist and a gay pastor, but the schedule fell through. I think they were willing to do it. I don't think that was the issue. I think the scheduling didn't work out. It ended up I had earlier tonight, it's again 12 hours ahead, so it's 3:07 in the morning here in Singapore. So if you're listening, it's on our great station in Dallas-Fort Worth, 13 hours ahead from there and so on. But I was asked to speak at the meeting. I thought, you know, Full Gospel Businessmen, they did a lot years ago, didn't they, in America? And a lot of people got saved there and touched by the Spirit. But, you know, it seems kind of like antiquated. And then someone said, oh, no, these key leaders. I mentioned it a little bit in the first hour, but these key leaders, key business leaders, people in education, media, who really want to make an impact in the society. What enthusiastic faith filled Jesus loving people with a real heart to disciple 1,000 young up and coming leaders who will be the government leaders, who will be the educational leaders, who will be the media leaders in the next generation. Great, great vision. I was very impressed with their spirit and their vision. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. I've got a few other news items I want to talk to you about. Let me just look over to Facebook where some questions were posted. Matthew, do you prefer the term Palestinian covenant, land covenant, or promised land covenant for that which is found in Deuteronomy 29, 1 to 30, verse 10? Certainly not Palestinian covenant, just because that's a negative word, Palestinian. Palestine, I don't mean that someone who calls themselves a Palestinian is negative. I mean when it was put on Israel, Judea, Samaria, when these things were put on the land and it was called Palestine, that's a negative. So why use that today? But land covenant, that works. Promised land is a bit more explicit, but either land covenant or promised land. Ashley, Dr. Brown, do you believe in the rapture of the church? I don't believe that we'll be rescued before the tribulation. No, actually, I haven't believed in a pre-trib rapture for, probably 38 years now. I work with folks who are pre-trib around the world, and some of the finest Christians on the planet are pre-trib. But no, I don't see that as taught in Scripture. I do believe that God's wrath will not be poured out on his own people, but there's always the wrath of Satan. There's always the wrath of man. And I believe that God can protect us from his wrath as it's poured out on the earth, just as he protected the children of Israel. Moses asks, according to Jack Van Impe, animals are also going to be raptured. He says after 1,000 years, Jesus will be recommissioned on this earth. I'm sorry, I don't know exactly what you mean by recommissioned, Moses. As far as animals being raptured, of course, I know of Jack Van Impe's ministry of many, many years, but I haven't heard a lot of his specific teaching. Does he teach that animals are going to be raptured? We're not talking about the world to come and resurrection. In other words, will your pet be there in the world to come? Will that amazing little dog that you had and that amazing cat or even the lizard that you had as a kid, will the pet be there in the world to come? Maybe the pet can talk in the world to come. Well, you can just speculate. But for sure, if the little dog isn't there, you'll have something even better than the little dog. But raptured. Matt, check on that. I'm sorry to laugh. In other words, you're walking the dog, and it's those who believe in a preacher rapture, it's not just that the person's caught up, but the dog is caught up. Dogs owned by believers? All right, 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Jeremy in Dothan, Alabama. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hey, thanks for taking my call, Dr. Brown. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
I just had a question. I'm a youth minister and in the Christian music and stuff for kids and stuff like that. But my question is, there's a Christian, some Christian rappers who come out recently called the 116 Click, which was White McRae and Triple E and these guys that are really saying a lot of truth in their music. They come against abortion and gay marriage and things like that. But the problem I have is they believe a limited atonement. They're a 5.2 tulip Calvinist. And I guess my question is, I know there's some Christian artists that come out like Jars of Clay and Michael Gunger that are just totally, you know, the Bible's not accurate and, you know, can't be on the same team with them. But as far as like the Calvinist movement, I mean, are they on the same team with us? I guess what I'm asking, can we endorse them? Are they, you know, on, you know, the same team as us? I guess is what my question is.
Yeah, well, certainly as far as being committed followers of Jesus and honoring Jesus as Lord and holding to the scriptures as the authority of God, sure. Calvinists are some of the strongest Christians, some of the strongest believers through church history over recent centuries, and giants of the faith like Charles Spurgeon and very, very popular gifted leaders today like John Piper. Sure. And many times Calvinism is where someone goes when they start to get serious theologically. That's what happened to me in the late 70s and early 80s. As I got more intellectually and theologically sophisticated, I became a Calvinist, but it was, in my case, at the expense of my spiritual fervor and devotion. And when awakening came in my life again, I realized, with all respect to Calvinism, that that I didn't see it as taught consistently in Scripture. A few minutes ago, at the end of last hour, my friend Dr. James White was mentioned, one of the top Christian apologists and a frontline soldier working for the Lord with the truth. James and I have debated Calvinism against one another. We much prefer being on the same team to debate others, but that's only happened once so far. So we're talking about fellow believers. And as I say, sometimes as people realize there's not a good theological base and they haven't been, they've just been kind of following a man-centered gospel, and they see the superficiality of a lot of the American church, so they want to get more theological, and they do, and they start studying theological issues, and often what they study is Calvinistic, and it goes in that direction, and they swing from being man-centered to say, hey, it's only for the glory of God, and so on. And in fact, a rapper like Lecrae has been discipled in theology by Dr. White. So the issue would be, though, is there a pushing of Calvinism that is so overbearing that you can't appreciate everything else that they're teaching and rapping? And I don't think that's the case at all. I haven't listened to the vast majority of the stuff of some of these Christian rappers who are.
I will say I have noticed some, you know, little things like for instance, one of the Craig songs talked about where I was saved, I was born again, and then he talks about how he went and did all these bad things, like had an abortion with his girlfriend, slept with her on a regular basis, things like that kind of are iffy to me. But you know,
no, I mean he would be good. Right. Again, I'm no expert on it, but that many of the lyrics in Christian rap really are very rich. In other words, they get to say a lot. Many of them preach against sin. Some of them were very lost, like I was. So, just into all kinds of decadent things before they got saved. So the big thing is, if Jesus is exalted and people are encouraged to turn to him, get into the word, turn away from sin, awesome. And if here and there you realize it's tinged with Calvinism, And you don't agree with some of that, hey, no big deal. If you felt that the whole purpose of song after song after song after song was to influence people in a Calvinistic direction, then you'd be less comfortable with it. But, you know, again, that's natural for any of us in terms of differences that we would have. But as far as Calvinists being allies, yeah, you have some who are stiff, dead, traditional, with no spiritual life. And all they think about is Calvinism, just like you have non-Calvinists who can be stiff or dead or into empty emotion. You know, there's good and bad with every group, but there are many top leaders who are Calvinists and who are zealous to win the lost, who have a heart for missions, who are people of prayer, and who are not just saying, hey, it's all predestined and it's just going to happen. And if you ever see seeds that are negative and that you feel are counterproductive, then you just separate those and keep moving forward. Hey, blessings to you down in Dothan, Alabama. Places like Dothan, Jeremy, I became familiar with during my days living in Pensacola during the Brownsville Revival, places I'd never heard of. I learned about for the first time. All right, we'll be back with your calls. Anything in the world you want to raise to me, ask me about, talk about, as we're coming your way live from Singapore, we will do it. 866-348-7884. Your calls and some Facebook questions when we come back.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Climate change rally, according to the report I saw drew 2,500 people in 150 nations. That's a lot of nations, pretty small crowds. Let's just grab clips 16 and 17. This coincides with the New York Times article, taking a call for climate change to the streets. What's interesting to me is how passionate folks are about this and how everything I've understood just says it's ludicrous, and the scientists who cook the books to make things look a certain way. And anyway, clip number 16.
What do we want?
Clean air.
What do we want? It
now.
No justice.
No peace.
No clean air.
No peace.
Yeah, you can hear it's not the biggest crowd. I'm sure there are things that we are doing that hurt the environment, and that there are things we have done over the years that have been done in poor stewardship. But the fact you get people passionate and worked up over this when, in point of fact, there's so much evidence against it. And then, you know, I think of one other thing. Some years ago, when we lived in Maryland, someone from the organization Greenpeace came knocking at the door of one of my friends trying to raise money to save the baby whales. Now, if you have harvesting of animals and it's creating an imbalance in the ecology of nature, and if man is being abusive in certain things, yeah, of course, we need to be good stewards of the earth. But the fellow from Greenpeace was trying to raise money to save the baby whales. And of course, the irony is that these folks will generally be, So I just had my figures wrong here. This explains it a little bit better. Yeah. How did I get those wrong numbers earlier? Roughly 100,000 filled the streets of New York City for the People's Climate March. There we go. Where did I get the other figures from? 2,500 and 100. In 150 other countries, smaller crowds in other countries, but 100,000 in New York City. Got it. Thanks. Here in the middle of the night in Singapore, I got my figures confused. My apologies. But the fellow said, I'm raising money to save the baby humans. And my friend said, I'm more concerned. Save the baby whales. And my friend said, I'm more concerned with saving the baby humans. You see, the folks that are normally on the front lines of fighting for animal rights and fighting against climate change tend to be very strongly pro-abortion. Interesting, isn't it? 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Fairfax, Virginia. Eugene, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hey, how you doing, Dr. Brown?
Good, well, thanks.
I just had a question. I've listened to your testimony a couple times online. Just, you know, you got some YouTube videos, the debates that you have with some rabbis and things like that. And I listened to your testimony a couple of times. And I had a question about Paul in Romans, in chapter 7, when he's talking about, you know, his flesh and how, you know, how he can't stop sinning. Or a lot of people look at that and say, well, Paul was, you know, he sinned. And I know from what I gather, I think you believe that that was him talking about the time before he was saved. Is that correct?
Yes and no.
Okay.
Let me explain. I do have a specific appendix in my book, Go and Sin No More, that I just address a focus on Romans 7. Because in the early church, there was a divide between the Eastern Church and the Western Church in terms of how Romans 7 was interpreted, where Paul says, the things I want to do, I don't do. The things I hate, I do. Wretched man that I am, who will deliver me from the body of this death? And the bigger issue is that Romans 6 and Romans 8 are explicit. Whatever he's saying in Romans 7, a few verses into the chapter, cannot contradict what he's now laid out emphatically in Romans 6. When we were baptized, we died to sin. How can we live in it any longer? That where he says, don't let sin reign in your mortal bodies. Sin will not have dominion over you. You're either offering your body as a slave to sin or a slave to righteousness. And then in the 8th chapter, where he continues about life in the Spirit, and if you live in the flesh, you die. If you, by the Spirit, mortify the deeds of the body. Right. So, in other words, whatever he's saying in Romans 7 is not a contradiction of 6 and 8, nor is it a contradiction of the rest of the New Testament. If he was saying that we are hopeless slaves to sin all the years of our life here in the Lord, then that would be a massive contradiction of everything else in the New Testament, which says that by God's grace we can live changed lives, by God's grace we can walk in purity, by God's grace we can be overcomers, so that sin is no longer the rule and the habit of our lives. We're not perfect. We still fall short. If we say we have no sin, we deceive ourselves, and the truth is not in us. But if we confess our sins, he's faithful and just to forgive us. But then that's 1 John 1:9. You go on in 1 John, he talks about living a life of purity, walking in the light, etc. So the reason I said yes and no, it's very possible that Paul is not just talking about his experience before knowing the Lord and being born from above, but he could well be speaking about life under the law or life in a legalistic mentality. In other words, not just what his experience was before he knew the Lord and had been born from above, but instead, any time you try to please God by doing your own works and overcoming sin on your own, you're always going to fall short. You're going to find that inability. So that's an interpretation that others have as well. The one thing that's clear is even though we would say, yeah, things I hate, I do, is that you every day as a believer? Is that me every day as a believer, that the things I want to do, I don't do, and the things I don't want to do, I do? Not to the depth of my being and not in terms of the overall walk that I live out. If that was the case, I wouldn't be a believer. If that was the case, I'd be committing all kinds of wicked things like I used to and not trying to serve. I wouldn't be on radio right now. I wouldn't be praying. I wouldn't be reading the Word. I wouldn't be sharing the gospel. I wouldn't be saying no to sin. If you're able to get going, Sin No More, you'll find it really helpful. And the appendix will get into this in depth. Gotta run, gotta break. Friends, Wednesday, I'm having a special 2-hour interview with best-selling author Jonathan Cahn on his new book, Mystery of the Shemitah. You can get the best-selling new book and our exclusive 2-hour interview. $25 postage paid. 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978. Once more, that's 1-800-278-9978. Or go to AskDrBrown.org.
Change the world.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome, welcome to The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. We are coming your way live from Singapore. So you want to hear something interesting. Singapore is a fishing village. It was under British control. Got its independence in 1965. It's about to celebrate its Jubilee year. Per capita, it's one of the wealthiest places in the world. To own a car here, you have to get a certificate of entitlement first. Those you bid, you're only allowed to have the car for 10 years. To get the car and the certificate, just a basic car to drive, a good 100,000 Singapore dollars, 120,000 in some cases, which would be roughly 100,000 U.S. dollars, because it's a small island and they control how many cars are on the road. After 10 years, that's it for the car. They want newer cars. They want cars that are in good condition. And the folks that I hear from really appreciate the government, really feel that their government is doing a good job. And every car has just a little box over on, at least as far as I've noticed, over on the driver's side, that drive on the opposite side of the road as British would. They're on the driver's side. There's a little box, and basically, as you drive, things are monitored, and they're just automatic tolls that are paid across the island. Without traffic, you could drive across the entire island in about 45 minutes. It's one of the more densely populated places in the world, over 5 million people living here, and it's quite an interesting ethnic mix, people with Chinese background, people with Malaysian background, a couple of other backgrounds as well. But their national spoken language, primary language, now is English. So you have some who've grown up speaking Chinese as well. But in any case, fascinating being here. Been to Asia many times, but only my second time here. So of all things, what do you think took place here over the last few days? Are you ready? A Formula One racing event. Formula One racing event. Yep. It's a small island to start. You had these race cars. So they had to block off certain parts and add it to the traffic. And you could hear the race cars at certain points, if you're in the right location. Anyway. 866-348-7884. Some questions I've been asked on Facebook. Hey, man, I didn't bring up the seance thing because there's no truth to that and zero truth to that. So didn't bring that part up. Daniel, do you agree with some believers who say you can lose your salvation, their doctrine based on Hebrews 6, 5, and 6? I personally believe that a real born again from above cannot lose salvation because salvation belongs to God. Daniel, I wouldn't base it on Hebrews 6 primarily, but there are many other passages in the New Testament that warn us. Hebrews 2 warns us against drifting. Hebrews 3 says that we're made partakers in Christ only if we hold fast our assurance until the end. Hebrews 4 speaks of those who believe but didn't. The gospel came to them, but they didn't enter rest, using the Old Testament imagery there. The 10th chapter warns that if we continue in willful, unrepentant sin after receiving the knowledge of the truth, that there's no more sacrifice for sins. It speaks of someone who has already been sanctified by the blood of Jesus and yet goes back, that all that person can look forward to is fiery judgment. Hebrews 12 gives a similar warning. You have warnings, for example, in 2 Peter, the second chapter. And there it says, for someone who knew the truth and went back, it's worse for them than if they never knew it. Yes, you can reject God the Savior. He has promised to keep us. Rest in Him. But we can choose to reject Him.
fire we want, for fire we please.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Actor Leonardo DiCaprio in the march in New York City, marching on climate change. Quote, we have a moral imperative to act. Mr. DiCaprio has received the Clinton Global Citizen Award for his work against alleged climate change. Of course, questions were asked as to whether he would fly in on a private jet. That's not good in terms of climate change issues. And of course, there's more. I'm not going to say more. 866-34-TRUTH. Again, if there are areas where we are being abusive in terms of Mother Earth, if there are things that we are doing that are not in the best interest of stewardship, yeah, of course we need to improve on those. But I am not one of the climate. I will say it. I'm not a movie buff. I'll see some movies when I'm flying. Normally overseas is when I'll catch some if there's an acceptable movie and it's, it doesn't have scenes or language or things that I would find objectionable or believe the Lord would find objectionable, that I'll watch some things. So I've only read a little bit, but apparently his most recent movie, The Wolf of Wall Street, let's just say it's not a holy movie. Let's just say it's not a godly movie. So some find it ironic that he's speaking about our moral imperative in terms of climate change and is nominated as a global citizen. I guess what one does on the big screen, if it exalts immorality or greed or whatever, does not disqualify one from being a global citizen. But hey, let's pray that he'll really come to know the Lord and that the mercy and goodness of God will be poured out on him and that he'll be turned to repentance. Okay. Let's see some further questions. Roma, did Jesus ever get sick? Well, there's nothing in Scripture that says so. And even though he did need to eat and sleep, he was fully human. He was also sinless and perfect. But there's not a syllable that says he was sick. When he hung on the cross, he bore our sin. And Isaiah 53 speaks of God crushing him with suffering, which some would say would mean made sick, but in context, as we look at the cross, it would just speak of severe suffering that he passed through. Sometimes our sickness is the result of sin. I know in my own life, sometimes I have pushed too hard. I have been abusive with my body in terms of not stewarding it properly, not eating the best foods. By God's grace, I've addressed that issue in terms of dietary lifestyle, but not eating the best foods and then just being so committed to finishing something or getting something done or interested in reading something that I sleep too little and get myself run down. So that would be wrong behavior or wrong lifestyle that could lead to sickness. I mean, a cold or sore throat or something like that. And then there are times where someone blatantly disobeys God and judgment comes on them. And then that would be a sin leading to sickness. But otherwise, sickness can come for no good reason in that respect. But there's still nothing in the Bible that ever says that Jesus was sick. Ryan, are you familiar with the theological idea labeled the New Perspective on Paul, which puts for the idea that Paul never stopped observing Mosaic law, including those pertaining to diet? Can you comment on it? Ryan, actually, that's not specifically a teaching of the New Perspective on Paul. Messianic Jews would hold to that, and many other Christian leaders through the ages would hold to it. Based on the book of Acts, we see that Paul continued to live as a Jew, as a law-abiding Jew. There'd be no reason he wouldn't. He wrote to the Gentiles explaining that they were not under the law, but there was no reason for him, now that the Messiah had come and brought these things to their fullest meaning, there's no good reason for him to not observe the law. He wasn't doing it in the same spirit he would have before. Look at Romans chapter 7, the first six verses. He does speak of doing it in the newness of the spirit. And I'm convinced that for the gospel's sake, he would not keep dietary laws, meaning if he was reaching a group of people and the only way to interact with them and fellowship with them would require him eating food that did not conform to the dietary laws, I think he would do it without hesitation, knowing there's a higher principle and that what you eat doesn't defile you. But remember, he went in the synagogues and preached in the book of Acts, and he was welcomed. If he didn't look like a Jew and if he was not known to be a Jewish leader, that would not have happened. Rick addressed the mysticism of some ministers. Is this good or bad for the church? It depends on what you mean by mysticism. There's some extreme stuff out there today that just wants to get people caught up in trances and visions, and it's just silly. It's just, you know, here's the new spiritual high you can experience or something like that. A.W. Tozer was a mystic. He put out a book called The Christian Book of Mystical Verse. Mysticisms can mean intimacy in prayer, deep meditation in the word. So I can't answer more. I know you're not mentioning names, but I can't answer more without knowing more of what you mean by mysticism. But I will say what is bad is seeking an experience. What is bad is just trying to get some type of experience, some spiritual experience or some out-of-body experience, or just receive some kind of revelation. That opens you up to all types of foolishness and even demonic activity. To want intimacy with God, to want to experience his goodness and his love, to want to walk in the fullness of the Spirit, those are wonderful goals and things quite in harmony with the Word. John, I have friends in Bible school, and the teachers led them to believe that Jews who follow Jesus continue to follow the law. Okay, same question. So did the Jews who believed in Jesus have to continue to follow the law based on the passage in Acts 21, rumors that Paul was teaching not to follow the law of Moses? Again, this indicates that Paul was saying, look, I'm not telling people not to keep the law. I'm not telling fellow Jews not to keep the law. My understanding is, John, that Jewish believers, many of them did continue to observe Saturday Sabbath, to follow the biblical calendar. Why wouldn't they? They're Jews now that the Messiah has come and has brought these things into their full meaning. And we have evidence of that from the early church, where much of the church didn't really understand who they were or what they were doing. That being said, and that indicates the degree to which the church had separated itself from its Jewish roots and the faith and lifestyle of the apostles. But that being said, with the destruction of the temple and with the radical changes that was going to bring, and with the scattering of the Jewish people, I believe that the emphasis more and more and more was on life in the Spirit and application through the New Testament. But to this day, there are many Jewish believers, not for their salvation, but part of their heritage and calling, who say, yeah, we continue to observe Seventh-day Sabbath and follow the biblical calendar and reach out to our people, Israel, and identify with our people, but it's not for salvation or justification. My book, 60 Questions Christians Ask About Jewish Beliefs and Practices, will answer this. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Eric in Cary, North Carolina. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Thank you for your program. The crowd that was in New York City marching for the environment, these are very sincere people, but probably almost none of them are born-again Christians. So this environmentalism functions as a religion for them. Men have a hunger for some kind of belief, and we know that from history, that there's always some sort of system that they follow that's religious. But these folks are using reverence for the earth and the environment as a substitute for true religion.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing, an interesting point that you raise, Eric. I'm sure there are believers who very much care about stewardship of the earth and point to the book of Revelation, where it speaks of wicked people or ungodly people destroying the earth. And if we believe the earth is the Lord's and everything in it, and these are things he's blessed us with and gift us with, we certainly want to be good stewards. But you're absolutely right. It becomes this religious cause, and most of the leaders would really be opposed to many of our biblical values. And as I mentioned earlier, The ones that want to save the baby whales are not concerned with saving the baby humans. One of the signs at the march in New York City said, "I am nature." So it is a substitute religion for many. And even the whole Mother Earth concept ties in with it. So there's a good stewardship, and Christians can be involved with that, and we should be wise and think generationally. But most of the folks at the forefront of the global warming movement, you're absolutely right, Eric, you're not going to find them doing the march and quoting from scripture, and then after that showing up at a pro-life rally.
I would urge...
Hey, sorry, got to run. There's the music. But thank you, sir, for the call and the observation. I'm going to get you a few more questions on the other side of the break.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to the Line of Fire. Hey, for everyone who prayed for me today, just my schedule got a little bit off because I'm not totally on Singapore's schedule here. Normally I make the shift very quickly when I'm in another country if I want to get totally on schedule, but because during radio in the middle of the night, I'm not on a totally normal schedule here, and I was just really worn out, very tired earlier today, and I just asked folks to pray. I've got a lot of ministry ahead in the coming days, very, very important luncheon about 8 hours from now, and lots of other meetings and preaching. So I asked folks to pray, and I've just been so invigorated and strengthened. So thank you, all of you who did pray for me today. Much appreciated. Lorraine wants to know, do I think the Antichrist will come out of the tribe of Dan? And where do I think they settled? I've heard they were seafarers who crossed the Aegean Sea, settled in Greece and Spartans. No, those are just myths in terms of that we can actually identify that this whole tribe went here, this whole tribe went there. The 10 lost tribes were largely lost to history as an entity, and as specific tribes. Some of them stayed in northern Israel, and with intermarriage became what we know as the Samaritans today, but then they preserved as much as they could loyalty to their law and to the Torah and to their traditions, and they exist as a very small group to this day. Others were absorbed into Judah, so just the Jewish people today. They fled to the south and were absorbed among the people of Judah. And others were scattered in different parts of the world, and every so often there are claims that this group is part of an ancient tribe. But Antichrist coming from tribe of I don't have the slightest clue, to be honest. And I don't think Scripture allows me to be more specific. When someone dies, where do they go? Absent from the body, present from the Lord for believers, non-believers to a place of separation, judgment. Some would argue that everyone sleeps until the resurrection, and then at the resurrection, the righteous are raised to be with the Lord forever, and the wicked are cast into hell. But it seems, based on lots of scriptural teaching in the New Testament, that there is an immediate existence right after death, either with the Lord or without the Lord. Question about the governmental theory of atonement. This was held by Charles Finney. Folks have been raising this recently after my debate with Pastor Brian Zand. Governmental theory of atonement. The governmental theory of atonement, also known as the moral government theory, I'm reading from theopedia.com, maintains that Christ was not punished on behalf of the human race. Instead, God publicly demonstrated his displeasure with sin by punishing his own sinless and obedient son as a propitiation. Because Christ's suffering and death served as a substitute for the punishment humans might have received, God is able to extend forgiveness while maintaining divine order, having demonstrated the seriousness of sin and thus appeasing his wrath. I believe there are many different aspects to atonement. I believe there are many different ways of looking at atonement, even including what's called Christus Victor, which I believe flows out of substitutionary atonement. The question of governmental versus penal, in other words, did Jesus die as a substitute and literally pay the penalty for our sin, or did he simply pay something representative? To me, there's overlap between them. Someone blogged recently and said, I didn't deserve to be crucified for my sin. Well, you better believe you did, and you better believe I did. You better believe every human being did outside of Jesus. Yeah, we deserve that and much more. So Jesus suffers a representative punishment by dying on the cross, by dying a criminal's death and suffering the worst possible death known in the ancient world, and public shame and humiliation. Some claim if you don't hold to penal substitutionary atonement that you're not a true believer and that Finney was a heretic for governmental theory. A lot of it is what you mean by the theory. The big thing to me is this. People could challenge me on theological precision. I understand the issues, but the big thing is this. Do you believe Jesus died as a substitute for our sins, that he took our place, that on some level he took our punishment and he bore our sins on the cross and he died so we could live? That's the heart and soul of the gospel. All right, let's see here. Trisha in Dallas, we're a little short on time, but please dive right in.
Oh, hi.
Yeah, go ahead, please.
Oh, okay. I know that there are a lot of people in Israel, Jewish people in Israel, are turning to Messiah. And I was wondering, you know, what percentage of people are doing that, and how fat quickly do we think that's happening? And will we see that in America anytime soon?
There have been seasons of great harvest on the mission field when people turn to the Lord in large number. And when I got saved in 1971, it was part of what we call the Jesus People movement. Here I am in Singapore, and they talk about the renewal that was happening here and similar things that were taking place in so many parts of the world. When I got saved in 71, it was not just hippies, radicals, and rebels who were getting saved in large number, to the point that Time magazine did a front page article on it, cover story, Jesus Revolution, or the Jesus People movement. But many Jews got saved at that time. Most of the folks that I know in Jewish ministry today got saved late 60s, early 70s. What's happening in Israel now is that for the first time, more and more native-born Israelis are coming to faith. The total number of Jewish believers in Israel is between probably 15 and 20,000. But for the first time, it's a growing number of native-born Israelis. I remember being at a conference in Israel 10 years ago, and they speculated there were maybe 500 native-born Israelis who were believers in Jesus. Now the figure would be probably a few thousand, so it's still smaller. And I fully expect that as God moves more and more in coming days, that just as we saw with the Jesus People movement, so many Jewish people coming to faith, that we'll see it again. It happened. There was a vast harvest in the former Soviet Union. God used my friend John Burness there dramatically to help reap that. And now many of them have moved to Israel, and they're part of the Messianic congregation there. There have been many coming to faith in Latin America, Jews. So they're just different seasons of God moving. But my expectation is we get closer and closer to the end, however long that is, that we'll see more and more coming until a final national turning. But keep praying. And then every individual, Jew and Gentile, that comes to faith, that's a great source of joy. Hey, friends, we're out of time. Thanks so much for being part of the broadcast here in Singapore. Take advantage of our special offer, an exclusive interview I'll be doing, 2-hour interview with Jonathan Kahn, best-selling New York Times best-selling author, on his new book, The Mystery of the Shemitah. That interview on Wednesday, plus the book, $25 postage paid. Best-selling. People are talking about it. Get it with the interview only here. 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978. That's what it's. 1-800-278-9978. My bottom line today, so many questions about lots of things about the end time and the Antichrist and what's coming next. This much I know. I'm alive today, and I want this day to count for the Lord.